Hello everybody. Do vegans need to be animal lovers? Welcome to Vegan Talk. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Luke.
And I'm Carlos.
Welcome to Vegan Talk, everybody. This is the Enough of the Falafel Show, where we get deep and philosophical, and instead of looking at the week's news or hearing people's vegan journeys, we just pick one aspect of veganism and go in deep, as they say. So let's get things started on this one. Do vegans need to be animal lovers? Carlos, you've met a few vegans in your time, I reckon. Would you say, from your initial quick judgments of people, that I'm sure you're not judgmental, but anyway, I'm waffling already. Do you reckon that most of the vegans you've ever met are animal lovers?
I would say the majority of them are animal lovers in some way, but they might be selective about the animals they love, which doesn't stop them from being vegan towards all animals.
Yeah. I was reading a Reddit article earlier today. The title of it was, "I'm vegan and I'm speciesist." And the person was going into, number one, how if it came to it, you know, they would still pick human above non-human animal, but also saying how, like, actually we grow up in a speciesist world, and so naturally we do still have those biases where we may, if pressed, confess to preferring one animal to another. Luke, your journey towards veganism we covered in an episode of the Going Vegan show. I seem to remember, like, a big part of that was fueled by your love for animals. Am I remembering rightly? This will be embarrassing if I've got it wrong.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, last time we had a chat, I sort of mentioned I became vegan, and it mainly stemmed from when I got a dog during lockdown. He sort of made me realise that, you know, animals are just like us, really, that they can feel pain and pleasure, and they deserve, you know, the right not to be enslaved by humans.
So let's start getting into the question itself then. So go on, Carlos, you get us going to start with. Do you think vegans need to be animal lovers? Like, could you be vegan and not love animals?
I think so. I think that they're not necessarily need to be animal lovers, kind of in the emotional sense of the word. They just need to kind of be somebody who considers the suffering of animals as something that's an ethical value that needs to be considered. They can be people who don't like to be in company of animals, don't like to see animals on their social media, don't enjoy going outside and listening to birds singing or anything like that, and still be vegans. I don't think that's necessarily. It just so happens that, as I said, a lot of vegans do love animals. I think everybody's a speciesist in some fashion. I'd like to think myself as being non-speciesist, but if I go to at this time of the year, my country park is full of flying ants, and they're so annoying. I certainly don't love them in any way, shape, or form, but that doesn't mean I'm going to kill them or harm them or do anything to them. I consider them to be as valid as my dog's life or any other animal life, but I certainly do not love them. So I think it's possible to be speciesist in that sense, that you don't love all animals, you don't think all animals are great and fantastic, but also you don't want to disturb their habitats, you don't want to kill them, you don't want to mess with their lives or ecosystems.
I hear and agree with your hypothetical example of somebody that is vegan but doesn't love animals at all. I just don't know if I've ever met anybody like that. I don't know if that person exists.
I've met somebody like that.
Okay.
That was a person who was very urban. They lived in a flat, liked living in the middle of London, didn't like the outdoors, didn't like pets, didn't want any kind of fur on their furniture, anything like, you know, didn't like the smell of any animal, etc. And they were still vegan for ethical reasons. They thought that animals did suffer and didn't deserve if there was a route out. But I agree, this is a very rare person.
Yeah. Would that be your experience too, Luke?
Yeah, I'd say I don't think you have to love animals to be vegan. I think you just need to understand pretty much what Carlos has already said. You just need to understand that animals are sentient like humans are, and just grant them moral worth and moral consideration. You know, animals perceive the world like us. They have consciousness. They can feel pain and pleasure. They can associate positive and negative emotions to different situations. And, you know, if you're somebody who doesn't necessarily love or even like animals, but you are morally consistent, I think those types of people would have to be vegan.
Something I wonder sometimes, and I've worked with a lot of vegans when been running a restaurant, and some huge animal lovers there. At times I wondered, all lovely people, I should say, but I wondered sometimes whether the kind of love for certain animals, let's say there's someone who's a passionate vegan and also a real passionate dog lover, does that actually continue to perpetuate speciesism? So actually, like, your love for animals being expressed in that way that is funneled towards, I'm aware I'm talking to two people who live with dogs, so please shoot me down. But like, does that perpetuate that potentially? Or does it actually, like, if we're to succeed as a movement, do we need to harness that love that people have for dogs and just say, hey, come on, let's just increase that to more animals?
Yeah, I mean, on that last point, really, so I'm sure you guys come across Elwood organic dog meat?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
so, I mean, obviously you'll know what the message is there, so...
Explain it to listeners, though.
What, do you want me to give it away, in case they don't know?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, so... Well, we can say there's a spoiler here, so, we'll put a link in the show notes. You can pause the show now and follow the link, but Luke, now give us the spoiler.
Yeah, so there's a very basic rundown. So there's a page on social media, and they've got a website called Elwood Organic Dog Meat. And what they do is they try and portray themselves as this ethical farm who breeds dogs into existence to milk them and harvest them for their meat. And obviously it gets a lot of shock reaction from non-vegans who think, how could you kill dogs? And when they click through to their website, it sort of goes through like a menu, if you like, of different parts of the animal that you can buy and what animals they kill, like which breed of dogs they can kill. And as you're scrolling through the page, obviously it gets more horrific. And then they have these sort of little prompts on there that says, I forget how it's worded exactly, but it's like, does this sound weird to you? And you sort of scroll down again and it sort of says things like, what if we change the word dog to pig? Would that make it better? And people must be like, hold on a minute. You know, I've just been absolutely outraged that this company is breeding dogs into existence to then kill them. But if it was pigs, I wouldn't care. So it sort of wakes people up a little bit to their sort of bias towards, you know, towards certain animals, you know, how we're happily going to pay for pigs, cows, chickens and sheep to be exploited and killed. But if we did it to a cat or a dog, you know, there's public outrage. So I think pages like that are really good at showing people that they do have this this bias. If I've not explained their page very well, please correct me. I've not looked at it for a while.
No, it was. I think it's a good explanation. I would say these days it's more than a page because Elwood's is doing a lot of video. I mean, they've been in the UK with a dog meat stall in the middle of the street, for example. You know, and offering meat to people and say, well, this comes from dog. Actually, it's vegan food. But, you know, they're going to know this is like, this is a little bite from a pug or Labrador ribs and so on and so forth. So they've explained it quite a lot, but if you explain it really well, that's the goal of the page and how it's phrased. If you think this is horrific for dogs, why would it not be horrific for any other animal?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of outreach, quite a bit of outreach, I would say. And we do show a lot of videos of, you know, pigs being killed and cows having their calves taken away, dolphins kind of being in this very small enclosure instead of roaming the sea. I agree with all of it. I mean, there's a reason we're showing that. It's because those animals are usually, besides the chickens, usually almost all the animals we show are mammals. So they're very easy to relate to us in terms of emotions and kind of their expressions on their faces are very similar to our expressions. And obviously to reach non-vegans, being speciesist in a way, it makes it much easier. Especially if you're talking, you know, often the arguments vegans use is something along the lines of, look, pigs are smarter than dogs. They have the intelligence of a three-year-old child compared to dogs, which are not nearly as cognitive, not enough cognitive ability. And that's all true. But to me, this argument is good. It does turn people vegan or have people start considering veganism. But the problem is always that there are plenty of animals which are very stupid and deserve to live as well. Or they might be stupid or cruel. I mean, an animal can never be cruel because I'm not a moral agent. But, you know, an animal can have a life of pure predation. You know, it can survive just on doing absolutely what we would consider horrific things. But for the animal, it's not a horrific thing. It's just what it does to survive. And, you know, evolution has made that animal into what it is. So there's no moral value there. But those animals also deserve our moral consideration. Although I don't think spiders would be exactly the animal that vegans pick to talk about. Or those kind of horrific insects that put their that lay their eggs inside the ants' nests, and then they kind of consume the baby ants and whatever, you know, whatever those things are, or the birds that do this as well. Vegans never use kind of this brutal side of nature to talk about veganism. It is for a reason. It's part of a strategy. I would say it's a good strategy, all things considered, because once people start on this kind of giving moral consideration to animals who think and feel mostly like us, then they kind of start on the journey to start giving more consideration to animals that are very alien to humans.
Just on that point, actually, Carlos, yeah, I was going to mention something very similar. So there are obviously different levels of sentience amongst different species of animal. So, you know, for example, if you're driving down the road and a fly hits your car window, you're not going to be as emotionally affected as if it was a dog that you've just run over. But, you know, it doesn't mean we should treat less sentient animals with less respect. It's just unfortunate that whatever we do in life, you know, some animals are going to be harmed by us just merely existing. But it means we shouldn't, it doesn't give us a reason to just go out of our way to unnecessarily harm these animals. So we should still give them all moral worth, even though, as you've said it, you know, they do seem completely, you know, alien to us, and it might be very hard to relate to them as an animal.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether actually it feels like we started off this conversation by unanimously agreeing that a vegan doesn't need to be an animal lover to still be vegan. And I'm wondering whether, like, that comes from a position where we've been vegan for a little while and we've rationalized our mindset and our worldview on this, and we can give it quite a philosophical, you know, dictionary definition, if you like, of actually, no, the two don't have to be in the same bit of the Venn diagram. However, in terms of, you were touching on it, Carlos, when you were talking about persuading people to be vegan, and Luke, similarly, in terms of like animals hitting your windshield, you'd much rather it be a fly than a dog, arguably. In terms of what persuades people to come round to a vegan way of thinking, actually focusing on love, like, love is not too dissimilar to compassion, is it? And actually, like, we feel as human beings, if you think of, like, I don't know if either of you or anyone listening has ever met a child who is vegan, particularly a young child, like, whilst they might be able to say things that sound rational and have like a rational belief, like, it's just their love for animals that is fueling it. And actually, when we think of people who are coming round to veganism from an ethical point of view, actually it is that compassion and that love, I think, that's driving it. And I say that as somebody who, if I never met another animal for the rest of my life, I don't think I'd be bothered. Like, I'm as close to a non-animal lover as it is. I have lived with animals. I'm obviously vegan. I obviously completely respect animal and will fight for animals' right to an autonomous life not being infringed upon. But I'm not bothered if I never meet another animal in my life. But I do still think, as human beings, that compassion and that kind of bit where it gets you in the heart, that's really powerful. And I wonder whether in most human beings that is much stronger than anything rational. I kind of think the rational explanation comes later to kind of put flesh on the bones of that compassion that we feel when we see an animal suffering or we meet an animal that we really love and empathize with.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when people watch, you know, slaughterhouse footage, you know, nobody enjoys watching that because you can relate to the suffering of the animal. Even if you, like you said there, you may not be bothered even if you didn't see another animal for the rest of your life. It doesn't matter. You still don't want them to suffer. I mean, when I sort of first got involved with animal rights, as you know, and I told you when we last chatted, I got involved with like an anti-vivisection group. I learned that dogs were still used in testing procedures and obviously was outraged by it. And it sort of sparked a chain reaction of events that led me towards veganism. But, you know, I talk to people all the time about, you know, how dogs are still used in animal testing. You know, they agree it's terrible and stuff, but they still haven't quite made that connection that they're also paying for other animals in the, you know, the farming industry to suffer just as much as those dogs in the vivisection industry. So it's not necessarily as easy as people who love dogs just transitioning straight to veganism, because they just haven't. I mean, we say it all the time, don't we, that we're all indoctrinated by pressures from like society, culture, tradition, industry propaganda to see animals like cats and dogs as animals that we should love and cherish and stuff. And we should see other animals like cows, pigs and chickens as ones that we can exploit. So it's not easy for people to snap out of that mindset when we do live in that like that sort of carnist world. But I think the love for animals certainly makes it a lot easier because you can relate to that pain and suffering. So it's definitely a good starting point for people.
Yeah, and recently with, let's say, over the last 10 years with social media, that we have superstar animals, and those animals, you know, like Esther, the Wonder Pig, Picasso in South Africa, they both died recently, actually. You know, those animals are, they have a massive following, and they have a vegan message to them. They're not just there for the likes, or they're not being exploited for social media. They're there as representatives of their species. First, in this case, the two mentioned were commercial pigs. So a pig breed that's used just for commercial exploitation, not like a natural breed that occurred in nature. But first, they represent their species as worthy of ethical consideration, and then they represent the rest of the non-human world, I would say. So a lot of journeys kind of start through that. Even my vegan journey, I would say, in the beginning was pretty much fueled by, okay, animals who are close to human intelligence or human emotions intelligence. And then I started that was kind of the emotional side. And then the rational side took over. Well, if these deserve consideration, then every other animal also deserves consideration, because all the other animals can suffer as well, just in ways which are not as relatable as a dolphin would suffer or a dog would suffer.
So all of that said, in all seriousness, like, should we not be picketing pet shops and really going after people who clearly, like, are emotionally invested, financially invested in a love of animals, like they live with animals? It sounds today like I'm having a go at people that live with animals. I'm definitely not. I'm just saying, like, if you clearly love animals, like, that you're spending your disposable income on them, you're allowing them in your home, surely that is the low hanging fruit of people who could start to see the world in a vegan way, because they're already having that compassion to other animals. Like, are we missing a trick?
I think they say they love animals, but they don't mean all animals. They mean certain animals. I think they mean...
No, yeah, absolutely. Not yet they don't, but like that capacity's in there demonstrably. So like, should that not be our next step?
Yeah, I would say there's some potential there, but a lot of people love their animals like they love their car or any other possession. That becomes, you know, people who buy dogs from breeders and pick a collar and things like that, or pick a dog breed based on some kind of catalog of breeds, which is what most kennel clubs do anyway. I'm not sure there's a starting point with them.
Sure, not everyone, but there's a lot of people out there who live with animals and love their companion animals who don't do so in that way.
Yeah, that's true. I would say most of the people I know who run or take part in dog rescues and dog shelters, that type of activity, they are either vegan or getting there. On the path there. I think it's almost impossible not to be.
I guess where I'm coming from with this is, like, if you think of how much time and effort is spent promoting all manner of different types of fake meat or plant milk or vegan cheese or things like that. Now, obviously, there are companies who have a capitalist business interest in promoting those things. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know if we're going to persuade people to go vegan by going, have you tried this vegan kebab? It's really nice. Whereas actually, like, if you say, you seem to really love your cat, can I just tell you about other animals very much like your cat?
I think it's a foot in the door, isn't it? I think it sparks a conversation that, you know, you can obviously relate to and they maybe are to relate to. So at least you can get them thinking about it. So I think it's definitely a way in to the conversation.
I've just never heard of it as like a form of activism, like targeting people who live with animals and trying to harness that love. In the same way that, like, we might say, well, if someone's vegetarian, like, maybe they're, you know, close to being vegan. Maybe that's a group of people that we might be able to nudge a bit closer. Just seems like there's lots of love for animals there. That
you could be onto something.
It's like the person saying, I invented Netflix, though, isn't it? It's easy to say. It's much, much harder to do.
I'll tell you what, on that, I mean, it's a little bit slightly off topic, but I always find it weird when a news story breaks of a animal that's either escaped from a slaughterhouse or escaped on the way to a slaughterhouse, and you see non-vegans rooting for the animal. And the irony is, the animal's only in that situation because they're paying for it to be there, but they root for the animal. It's weird. So they clearly do care, because they can relate to the sort of, as Carlos put it earlier, the sort of super animals who have got this ability to evade humans, and, you know, they've sort of created like a unique personality, because we don't see animals in farms as individuals. We see them as like a collective. So when these unique animals escape from a slaughterhouse, everyone roots for them. They want the animal to survive. And I just find it weird how people, they still don't make the connection, and they've not realized that the only reason the animal's there in the first place is because of them.
Yeah, it's almost like the animal being resourceful and brave all of a sudden gives it enough worth to being alive. If they, you know, if they just passively take it, then they're not worthy of being alive. I would say this, though, in times where slavery was normalized, the slaves who kind of were resourceful and rebelled often were given some sort of course they were chased and they would try to kind of be put down, but there was also this thing where the majority of the population would go, well, they deserved to be free. They actually put in some effort. It's as if pigs had any concept of what the hell's happening to them as they're carried in a lorry somewhere, and one just happens to, you know, find a gap to sneak through as animal, and then all of a sudden that pig is, oh, that pig deserves to be alive because they ran away. Well, all pigs would run away if they could. It's your fault. They're not running away. There's hundreds of textbooks on how to control livestock as it goes to the abattoir. Otherwise, they would all escape. If you open the door, they will all escape. You never see them again. And I think this is just kind of the dehumanizing of animals and saying, well, if this animal exhibits human characteristics, then it deserves the kind of consideration we give to humans. And it's a dangerous road to go down to. It's, you know, Picasso, people were like, I'm so glad Picasso exists and they were not killed in a slaughterhouse because Picasso can paint. Well, that doesn't mean anything. The part that's worth saving about Picasso is not that Picasso could paint. The part that's worth saving is because she was a being that didn't want to die.
I'm wondering whether the reason that people will root for these animals that are, well, they're not complicit in what's happening. They're very actively, clearly not complicit, where it could be quite easy to see a mass, you described it as a mass, Luke, of animals as just being complicit in what is happening. And of course, like you say, Carlos, they're not complicit, but in our sort of cognitive bias and not wanting to see anything that sort of is dissonant with our view that, oh, no, eating animals is fine. Like, if we see stuff that seems to confirm our belief, then we'll go along with it. Whereas someone really actively saying, no, I'm not complicit in this, that really screams out to us, and we sort of have to let that one go in more senses than one.
That goes back to all the propaganda, doesn't it, from the meat, egg and dairy industry. I mean, I was driving up to Scotland last month and I was behind a lorry carrying sheep to a slaughterhouse. And on the back of the lorry, it had two cartoons, one of a pig and one of a sheep. And they were both smiling.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it.
Like it's sick. It's like people see that and think, oh, all the animals must be happy going to their deaths. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and I think we've all heard the story about milking cows, which is a specific type of cow, milk cows, which don't exist, by the way, but non-vegans love to talk about milk cows, who apparently would be in great pain if they were not milked. It's amazing.
Bonkers.
it breaks all laws of biology regarding regarding mammals, but who cares anyway?
They have been in great pain, and it was when a farmer put their fist up their ass, actually. That's what a great pain was.
Exactly.
Now, the on the subject, Luke, of cartoon animals smiling on products that have had animals exploiting, I think that is probably the thing sort of disproportionately for me makes me absolutely furious. I just think, how dare you like exploit this animal and have the audacity to create a picture of them enjoying it, being complicit in it, is absolutely disgusting.
It's like laughing cow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Happy eggs.
Yeah.
So these things don't exist.
Yeah.
They're just like a marketing tool to just trick people and make them sleep better at night. It's, like you say, it's just sadistic. It's vile.
And in terms of propaganda, you get things like all those children's books that, about farms where all the animals are living happily in the farm and the farmer feeds the animals and they're all kind of a big, happy family. I mean, farmers love this family metaphor, by the way, which raises some concerns if they treat the rest of their family like they treat their animals. Then I don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
Absolutely. Tom, who has appeared on the podcast a few times over the winter last year, he is an early years teacher. And he was speaking to just how much children's literature, film, cartoons and stuff like that just really gets these myths out there early on. And actually, to come back to our topic for this discussion, like in terms of vegans being animal lovers, like it's all playing into, it's all funneling into the fact that kind of deep down humans are compassionate and are animal lovers, and it's playing to that, isn't it? And perhaps the vegan movement can harness that a bit too, and not lose that, not become overly rational.
I mean, we've basically had that love for animals almost knocked out of us, haven't we? Because as kids or as children, you know, you wouldn't want to harm an animal. I forget what the exact example is. Is it like a lamb and an apple with a baby or something like that? You know, the baby doesn't start eating the lamb. It eats the apple. It plays with the lamb. It's just, you know, through all these different pressures, we have that compassion and empathy towards animals knocked out of us, and it's just about sort of rekindling that love and finding it again, I think.
Every single child I've met who was not raised by vegans, so that would be like the vast majority of children I've met, their parents lied to them about the father plate.
That and Father Christmas. On that bombshell, on that Father Christmas spoiler, let's bring the conversation to an end.
What do you guys think listening to today's topics? If you've got any thoughts on it, just drop us a quick email to enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com.
Yes, and please have a look at our back catalogue and the other shows we have. So that would be the Vegan Week show and Going Vegan.
Absolutely. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Your next dose from Enough of the Falafel will be on Monday. That will be our next episode of Vegan Week. It's going to feature myself, Julie and Kate. And as usual, we'll be looking at the week's vegan and animal rights news.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Luke.
I've been Anthony.
And I've been Carlos. And you've been listening to Vegan Talk from Enough of the Falafel.